Welcome to Business Matters. I'm your host, George Colombo, and I want to welcome you to our ongoing conversation about things that you need to know to move your career forward. So I've got a question for you. What would it mean to your career, and what would it do for your effectiveness as an IT professional if your brain worked considerably better than it does today? And a more important question than that, what kind of impact would something like that have on your life? Would you be happier? Would you feel more fulfilled? Well, our guest today is uniquely positioned to answer those questions. And here's a spoiler alert. The real answers aren't anything like what you see on the TV show Limitless. In fact, today's show is going to be a bit different than anything we've done before here on Business Matters, but my guess is that you'll find it fascinating. You're going to meet Debbie Hampton. Debbie's the author of a recently released book titled How to Beat Depression and Anxiety by Changing Your Brain. And she blogs regularly, not only on her own website, thebestbrainpossible.com, but also as a popular guest blogger on a number of health-related sites. Now, let me give you the background. In 2007, after battling depression and going through a divorce, Debbie suffered a traumatic brain injury as the result of a suicide attempt. She was severely impaired both physically and mentally. She lost her fine motor skills. She couldn't even speak properly and wasn't given much hope for recovery. But it was at that point that she decided to take charge of her own recovery and began learning about an emerging concept in neuroscience called neuroplasticity. Now, the basic idea is that, contrary to what doctors believed for centuries, scientists were discovering that not only can our brains keep changing throughout adulthood, but also, and here's the important thing, we can deliberately direct those changes in a positive direction. Now, what Debbie began learning back then changed her life dramatically, but one of the most important things she discovered is that all of her information had huge implications for everyone, people like you and me, not just brain injury patients. And I've got to add here that I've been a fan of Debbie's work for years, but I never had an opportunity to speak with her before we began working on this podcast. So this is a big thrill for me, and I'm absolutely certain that it's going to be a valuable experience for you too. So Debbie Hampton, welcome to Business Matters.
Thank you so much, George.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about, so I want to dive right in, and let's start here. I'm hoping that you could tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to have a brain injury. What happened? What was the nature of your injury, and what was the extent of your injury?
Well, as you said, George, I tried to commit suicide in 2007. And by taking, I think, over 90 pills, I'm not really sure, I don't remember. And we're not exactly sure what caused the brain damage. It could have been my heart stopped. I ran a fever over 107 degrees, and the brain was deprived of oxygen, so any of those could have been the cause of the brain injury. The doctors technically termed it encephalopathy, which basically means your brain isn't working right. So as any brain injury, it was very individual, and my recovery was unknown.
So you didn't know, your doctors were telling you they didn't know what to look for, looked forward to on a going forward basis, where it was going.
Right. Right, wow. And you have to understand that I was severely brain injured. So, I mean, I didn't know or have the cognizance to even really know that I was brain injured. All I knew was the here and now. When I woke up from the coma, I did not know my second son had been born. I did not know I'd been divorced for 3 years. I mean, I did recover slowly somewhat within the first year, but I was not a cognizant person evaluating the situation or able to ask questions and gather information to go forward.
Well, so that's intriguing. Now, how did you get from there to a place where you decided that you were going to take charge of your own recovery?
That is an interesting story. And to be honest, the first year, I really didn't want to live. I committed or tried to commit suicide in June. And I had a brother that died on New Year's Eve. So I gave myself to New Year's Eve, and I said, if things aren't any better by New Year's Eve, I'm going to kill myself again. Well, I guess I didn't have the guts to do that. But in January of that year, I went to Hawaii with another brother and had a near-drowning incident. And while I was almost drowning, something inside of me just kicked in and fought to live. And after that incident, I thought, okay, without my brain, like, interjecting all its depressive thoughts about the past and the future and debating whether I wanted to live or not, my natural instinct was to fight to live. So I must want to live. So from that point forward, I started acting like I wanted to live and started learning about how to better my brain and how to rehabilitate my brain.
And how did that process start? Where did you start to dive into that subject, and how did it start to make sense to you?
Well, I read a book by Norman Doidge called The Brain That Changes Itself. And basically, it is a revolutionary book that transformed the brain information industry. It's all about neuroplasticity, and it is a guide, telling how real people, like that suffered traumatic strokes or brain injuries, or were even born with half a brain, how they recovered and healed their brains. And, it gave specific instructions on how they did it. And it was a manual for me to follow. Right there was a manual telling me how I needed to improve my brain. And not only telling me how, but telling me that it was possible and that it was up to me.
That must have seemed like pretty amazing news.
It was, and to be honest with you, it was the first time that I was given a glimmer of hope. The doctors wouldn't really give me any hope. They wouldn't commit to anything.
Now, I want to put this in a little bit of context, though, for the benefit of our listeners. Everything that you learn from this point forward, I'll quote you from your website. You say, if I can do it, you can too. No brain injury required.
Right.
All of the things that you learned about are applicable to people who are not necessarily brain injured.
Oh, definitely. Now, my brain had a lot of room for improvement, which is why I saw such dramatic results. But every brain from birth to death is capable of change by neuroplasticity. What neuroplasticity is the capability of your brain to change its actual physical form and function based on your behaviors, your thoughts, and your experiences. Now, a lot of this is subconsciously directed by our childhoods and what happens to us. And we don't even think about, like, habits are shaping our brain. But if you intercede and consciously direct this process, you can actually change your brain, whether it's injured or not.
And how do you do that?
I would say the easiest way to do that is through mindfulness. But I want to first say that when you're a child, the neuroplasticity switch is always on. I mean, your brain is like a sponge, and it is always changing according to your environment. Now, when you become an adult, the switch can't be turned back on, but your brain isn't as acceptable and vulnerable to influences as when you're a child. But the way you turn the switch back on is you have to really be mindful and pay attention and focus and have the intention to change your brain. And your brain changes through repetition. I mean, your brain is a product of what you do every day, over and over.
Well, so let's go back to the phrase you used just a moment ago, which is mindfulness. It's something that we've spoken about on this show before, but it's a term that people tend to define in ways. How do you define mindfulness in this context, in terms of neuroplasticity?
Okay, mindfulness is being aware of your mind. It's not only being aware, it's having an awareness of your awareness. It's being present in the moment and being attentive to what you're doing and what you're thinking. We go through life mostly on automatic, unconsciously. And mindfulness is interjecting in that process and becoming aware of your actions and thoughts. Judging your actions and thoughts is becoming aware of them and then pausing and consciously deciding how you want to proceed. And there's the ability to change your brain and your life. After the
so what? Sure. So what's the specific prescription? How do you do that? It's not something that comes naturally to most people.
Okay. I would recommend that someone start by meditating. Meditating has been proven to physically change people's brains. And you can do affirmations, which are positive statements. Basically, it's challenging your traditional ways of thinking and perceiving. You want to expand your vision, take your beliefs, and question them and challenge them and figure out if they work for you anymore and if that's what you really want to believe.
So was meditation the place where you started?
Yes. I actually, because my brain was so injured, I had what I called healing time. And about an hour every day, go sit in what I called my meditation corner, and I would try to meditate. When I first started, I could not meditate because my mind would not stop. So I did affirmations, I did thought reframing, I did visualization to repair my brain, and I also would try to meditate for like 5 or 10 minutes, which is not actually clearing your mind of thoughts. It's observing the thoughts that do come up.
And that's an important point. I think when most people think of meditation, they don't think of it quite like that. They try for that formulation that you just said about clearing your mind of all thoughts, and that's really a misconception.
Well, there's a whole spiritual side to meditation. And I think that a lot of that makes it way too complicated and imposes unrealistic standards on it. What I think of meditation is as a mental health tool. It's a tool to work with your thoughts and your emotions and become aware of them and guide your thoughts and emotions to guide your brain.
Now, how do you become aware of the fact that your brain is beginning to change in response to these kinds of techniques? What kind of hints do you see?
Well, I'll tell you what I saw at first. I saw the big thing is that you stop reacting to everything that happens. Like those knee-jerk responses that got me in trouble in the past, like trying to commit suicide. And instead of reacting to things that happen, you wait and you thoughtfully respond. And I'll tell you, life gets a lot better when you start responding rather than reacting. And another thing you'll notice that changes is you have more compassion and understanding and forgiveness for other people, because instead of assuming and projecting and labeling, you start mindfully exploring and being open to the thoughts. I mean, something that is different than your belief does not challenge you anymore. It's something to explore.
So, a couple of questions here, Debbie. One is, how long did it take you to begin to perceive some changes? And kind of a corollary question, based on what you've learned, is that longer or shorter than most people? How long would somebody in our audience expect before they start to notice changes from a mindfulness regimen?
Well, I would say it's very individual, but in studies that they've done with meditation, people have seen changes within 8 weeks.
Interesting. And that's based on how much meditating?
I think 15 to 30 minutes a day.
Interesting. So you've looked at some other techniques as well. I mean, I think meditation, you and I have corresponded about this. Meditation is probably the most important place for anybody to begin. But what other things have you learned about?
Oh, visualization is a powerful mind-body tool. Your body responds to every single thought that goes through your mind. I think it was Norman Doidge that said your neural network actually responds at a microscopic level to every thought you have. Now, it doesn't make neuroplastic change to every thought, but when you think about something scary or stressful, your body reacts to that. And similarly, if you have calming, reassuring, encouraging thoughts, your body is going to react to that. So that was the biggest way that I found to calm my system. And I also actually did visualizations to, I would see images of my brain repairing itself. And I fully believe that that helped.
Now, you bring to mind a comment at the outset of our talk a few moments ago. We're not simply talking about a change in perspective when we talk about this stuff. We're talking about techniques that over time in fact, physically change your brain. Is that correct?
Correct. Oh, yeah. I mean, these physically make changes to the neural connections in your brain. What you do repeatedly, your brain is very efficient. It's going to wire to make that the default pathway. So if you're constantly being stressed and having negative thoughts, that's going to be your brain's go-to. But you can change that. And if you change those thoughts and those patterns, your brain is going to change its pathways physically.
One of the metaphors that I've heard is that it's kind of like how an infinite number of threads can weave into a rope and a cord that's unbreakable, that it's the cumulative effect of these small things over time.
Exactly right. I like that. I hadn't heard that before.
Well, I'm happy to contribute something here, Debbie. You also talk about things like diet. What can you tell us in general in that area? What helps? What hurts? And what do people need to know that they might not be thinking about today?
To turn your neuroplasticity switch back on, you have to provide your brain with a healthy, encouraging environment. And you do that with your lifestyle. In such things as diet, exercise, sleep, stress management, socialization, mental stimulation, all that. I mean, you've got to support your brain so that it can support you.
Interesting. And are all of those part of your regime?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty boring.
Well, listen, this is fascinating stuff. One big question and then a small question before we wrap up. Specifically, how would you suggest people get started? What are your best tips for the techniques that will get people on this path?
Well, my best tips are in my book and on my website.
Okay.
So I would suggest they buy my book and go to my website. But basically, it's in their lifestyle habits. And I would recommend that anybody take up a mindfulness practice, start meditating, even if it's for 5 minutes a day, and start visualizing. I mean, they've got to start working with the brain and controlling their brain instead of their brain controlling their life.
And will they find your techniques for meditation in your book and on your website?
They will, but I'm not a meditation teacher. Like I said, I approach meditation as a mental health tool. There are all kinds of flavors of meditation, and somebody has to find what works for them.
Interesting. Well, just to reiterate for the benefit of our listeners, your book is titled Beat Depression and Anxiety by Changing Your Brain. And your website is thebestbrainpossible.com. And I can tell you from personal experience that getting started on your website is just, don't do it if you have someplace to be in a short amount of time, because you'll just get sucked in. There is so much information there. Debbie, thank you so much for spending time with us today. It's been a real pleasure to finally speak with you, and keep doing all the wonderful stuff you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much, George.
Awesome. Well, this is Information Week Radio. Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to this streaming, don't forget that you can join Business Matters live on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You'll have a chance to interact with other listeners. And if we're doing a live show, you can submit questions to your for our guests. You can check us out at www.informationweek.com/iw-radio.asp. Now, next month, we're going to be featuring, in spite of what I just told you, we're going to be featuring a recorded look back at some of our favorite Business Matters episodes so far. And if you've just begun following us, trust me when I tell you that there were some good ones. Then we're going to be back in January with a relaunch that I think is going to knock your socks off. So I'm your host, George Colombo. Thank you for joining us on Business Matters from Information Week Radio, and we will see you again.